Okay, let's take another poll. How many people in the back can actually see me? Because I'm like short and... All right, you got the lousy seats. Okay, let's one more poll. Am I, let's see, tall, dark, and handsome, or short and bald? Okay, don't answer that. I've got the task of giving you 8 hours of information in less than 58 minutes. So I'm going to hit the ground running. I'm going to go at a fast pace. So please continue to eat while I speak. How many of you are in sales? How many of you are not in sales? How many deal with people? You're in sales. Everybody's in sales. But here's the problem. When we think of a salesperson, in any television show, movie, how are they always portrayed? Help me out here. Sleazy, slick, conning, dishonest, pushy, good looking, plaid pants, striped sport jacket, right?
Jerk.
Anybody know why they're always portrayed this way? It's true. There are 14 million salespeople in the U.S. today. Studies show that 97% are below average. See, if you hit quota, if you set quotas for yourself, whether you own your own business or the company set them for you, and you hit quota, that means you became average. So I'm going to make you a promise this afternoon. I don't know about any of you, but I have no attention span. I could not listen to a speaker for 60 minutes, 15 minutes, maybe 10 is my limit, unless I get three things. Number one, the time to fly by. Excuse me for walking back and forth, but the polls, so I'm trying to give it fair for both these sides. So, but number one, you want the time to fly by. Number two, you want to laugh, you want to be entertained. You want to walk out, and this is the best compliment a speaker can get. Hey, that Becker guy wasn't so bad. So that's what we're looking for. And number three, to learn stuff that you forgot. See, first of all, let's get something out of the way. I am not a motivational speaker. I don't live in a van down by the river. My name is not Matt Foley. I speak, and if you don't get that one, ask somebody a little bit younger next to you, okay? I speak on sales and customer service. But here's the problem. As I said before, most salespeople are pretty bad. I'll give you an example. What's the second largest purchase most of you make in your entire life? Car. How many of you have bought a car or truck in the last 5 years? How many found it to be one of the most wonderful, pleasant experiences of your entire life? Lexus, Saturn. Okay. You walk in any dealership in the country, and here's what you find. I do this pretty good. Let me set up, please. Now, these are the people who have been selling less than a year, the new people. Okay, let's talk about the veterans now. These are the ones in the business 3 years or more who are now teaching the newer salespeople how to sell. These are the veterans, the experienced reps. This is the roof of the car or the truck. Please imagine. Can I help you? My name's Hal. I'll either be here in the back smoking a cigarette. If you need me, let me know. It's so hard. See, I want to ask you all in this room, see salespeople. Will you buy? Whether it's things for your company, whether it's your personal life. And I'm not going to go through because we have a lot of time, but it's hard for all of us to think of a great salesperson. I mean, if you take the last year, all of you had at least contact with 200 salespeople. Try to think of one that was genuine, down to earth. As they said in the movies, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, righteous dudes, sincere. It's hard to find one. But here's the problem. Every salesperson says they're great. Our tiny little company trains excess of 15,000 salespeople a year. I have never met in my entire life a salesperson say this. Hey, I'm a loser, Kepler, right here. Oh, I suck. The reason I've had 9 jobs in 6 months, it's me. Never heard a salesperson say this. They always say how great they are. But here's the three questions I want to ask all of you. I don't want you to raise your hands. I just want you to think about it. Whatever business, you're in the business of advertising specialties. Or it is, and then somebody says, Dan, not pens and pencils, writing instruments, you know, when you're talking about pencils, but you are selling creativity to businesses. Anybody can sell advertising specialties, but if the best people here do things differently. So the promise I'm going to make you, if you listen to me today, listen to me, and do things a little bit differently, or if you're already doing them, not to change, you will increase your sales. Because your profession is selling. your product that you sell or the advertising specialties. But here's the problem with our profession. Our profession has so many millions of people. It's the second highest paid profession in the world. Physicians number one, sales number two. Now do not raise your hands at this. I just want you to think about it. So these are just thinking questions. How many of you have read a book cover to cover on sales in the last 12 months? Now you don't have to raise your hands again. Well, if you're really proud, you make. I'm not pitching my books. You go to the library, they're free, okay? I'm talking about reading. If you don't like to read, this is fine. When's the last time you listened to a CD, a DVD-ROM, a CD-ROM, a cassette, an 8-track? I don't care. When's the last time with your own money, and I'm proud of you to be here today, besides today with your own money, took at least a half a day sales course to better yourself? See, whether I talk about my contemporaries, Tommy Hopkins, Jeff Gittem, or Brian Tracy, Barry Farber, we're all going to say the same thing. Most salespeople are lousy. And here's the problem. Not once today are you going to hear me say anything new. I don't have an original thought in my head. I'm an idiot. And the people that know me, my close friends, go, yeah, he's an idiot. In fact, if you're in a bookstore and you see my book and you see this other guy's book, I'm going to tell you to buy this other guy's book. It's better and it's cheaper. Good salesmanship, huh? It is the most widely published book in the history of publishing. The Bible's number one. This guy's book is number two. When he was interviewed in the 1940s, he admitted that he stole his stuff from Socrates and Jesus. Now, can you imagine being in a debate? Here's your podium. Here's Socrates. Here's Jesus. And it's your turn. Pass. What are you going to win against Jesus? I don't think so. The book is called How to Win Friends, Influence People by Dale Carnegie. See, the whole book comes out to two words. Find want. Find out what customers want. See, your customers either want to entice new customers or they want to brand their business, right? You're there to help them. You're the creative partner. You're the doctor of, I'll say AS, advertising specials, AS, which shorten it up. And you'll find out what I mean by that a little bit later. You're the physicians. Great salespeople do things differently. Now, the most important ingredients that make the best of the best are not trainable today. See, I call this afternoon sales deodorant. When you put on deodorant, what happens the next day? Wears off, you smell lousy again. This doesn't work. Hopefully, maybe today you go, oh, it was okay, but are you going to go back to your old habits of doing things? Absolutely, watch. If anybody's not eating, the ones that aren't eating, fold your arms. Take your arms, unfold them, fold them the opposite way. Some of you can't do this. Some of you stayed up really late last night. Now, take it and do it from scratch the opposite way. Kind of weird, kind of uncomfortable. Just not a habit. But if we sat here for 3 weeks, just fold your arms the opposite way, 8-9 hours a day, it'll be a new habit. One more exercise. All of you do this. Put your hands in front of you and go like this. Okay, that's your Etch-a-Sketch. You got a clean slate. Whatever you heard up till today, I want you to put aside. All right? So here's the most important ingredients that cannot be trained. How do you train desire, dedication, focus, discipline, honesty? How do you train empathy? How do you train putting your customer first every single... See, when they're small, we call them customers. When they're big, we call them clients. How do you decide putting your customer first every single time where they know you're putting them first? How do you train enthusiasm? Imagine I came in today and I started off my speech like this. Hi. My name's Hal. And I'll be your speaker for like an hour. Oh yeah, I feel like crap. But anyway, let's get into it. You know what my job is to do today? Take a guess what my job is to do today during lunch. Help me out. What's that? Motivate? Good answer. Wrong. Okay. What else? Educate? No. Good answer though. Train? No. Entertain, keep you awake. No, nobody's even close. What's that? Get you thinking? Good answer. No.
Remind you?
No. Distract you from whatever it is? Maybe. But not even close.
Inspire.
What's that?
Inspire.
Great answers. Not even close. Here's my job today. to sell you on me. I'm back here a second time. I hope to come back a third and fourth time. My job is to sell you on me. Right? Isn't that your job to sell your customers? So I'm going to show you the greatest form of advertising you will ever sell for yourselves. It's called word of mouth. There's nothing better where you get back tomorrow, Monday, Tuesday, and all you do is get your voicemails and people are calling you saying, hey, I hear you're good. Somebody gave me your name. A company gave me your name. I want to talk to you. There's nothing better than that. And I'm going to show you how to do that today. Now, here's why salespeople fail. I got to spend a couple minutes on negatives and we'll get them out of the way. There's only three reasons why salespeople fail. Number one, you don't like what you're doing. You get up and you go, hey, you know, I hate this job. Now, here's the deal. If you hate what you're doing, I want you to stay here an extra couple days. Okay? When you get back to your hometown, I want you to tell this to your boss, because I'll be in another city. I'm not sure which one I'll be in. But I want you to tell your boss this. Hal told me to tell you, I quit. Why are you doing what you're doing if you don't like it? Have you ever met anybody that hates what they do and does a good job? Or conversely, they love what they do and they do a lousy job? Can you imagine going to the doctor and go, Doc, I got chest pains. Doctor goes, man, I really hate the left side of the body. I was so bored in school that day. Foot, I'm good. Number one, if you don't like what you're doing, give it up. Number two, you can have all the excuses you want. See, in this room, some of you did really well last year, some of you didn't. The ones that did really well, here's why. They just worked harder. You got to make more sales calls. I love when someone says, well, I want to double my sales next year, Hal. What do I have to do? Double your calls. There's no secrets here. So number two, you got to work, got to make more sales calls. Number three, you have to ask more questions. See, human nature allows us to want to talk. We want to go in someone's office. We want to tell them about our company. How long we've been doing this? What we've done for other clients? The greatest sale we ever made? We want to talk about ourselves. How I like doing this? Guess what? Customer doesn't care. They only care about one thing. What are you going to do for me? And the only way you're going to find that out is by asking them questions. Period. The less you talk, the more you sell. If you want to take a little pocket dictator and go on a sales call and tape the call, get in the car, press play, if you find yourself at any time doing more than 20% of the talking, you are not selling, you are telling. So first thing you must do when you get in someone's office, first thing you must do is say, hey, can you show me around? Give me a tour. Because if you go in someone's office, you're offensive, defensive. You go in the company, now you get to see everything. You get to see stuff. You get to see if maybe they spend a lot of money. Maybe they don't. Maybe you see some successory posters everywhere. Or despair.com posters, the opposite. If you haven't checked out that website, it's a fun one. But, you know, just check things out. Look around. Notice things. Look on their desk. Look on their credenza. Maybe they have some stuff that people gave them. I don't know. Get a tour. So anyway, everywhere I go, here's what I hear. Well, Hal, our industry, our business, our association, our company, we're a little bit different. Tell me if you fall in the same categories. If any of you fall in these areas. Number one, you're either for-profit or non-profit. I'm going to guess most of you in this room are for profit. Number two, your best customers spend the most amount of money with you. Your worst ones nickel and dime you to death. And the ones that had a problem, to whom you've overreacted to and blew them away with the best service, are some of your best customers. Sound kind of familiar? Yeah. Easy stuff. Easy stuff if you follow the basics. So, let's talk about selling. I gave all of you a card on your table. And why I gave you a card is because what you're going to do is you're going to forget everything today. But if you follow this card and three more words I'm going to give you later, this is all you need to know for sales. And I really mean this. This is all you need to know just to cover the basics. So let's go through the back of this card. Number one, top salespeople are incredibly organized. Who here has a daily planner? Who in this room does not have a daily planner? Who does not? One, two, three, four. Now, don't worry, there were 2003s. I'm trying a long time to get rid of these things, okay? Just kidding. Here's the deal. You gotta write everything down. You have to write everything. I don't know about you. The older I get, the dumber I get. Write everything down. Look, see, all selling is this. Customers you got, customers you don't got, right? The ones you don't got, what do? You get them. The ones you got, what do? No, I got to give you a Cleveland, Ohio term. You suck up. Let's all say that back. You suck up. Now, see, Natalie is my contact. She brought me in. Now, people say, what kind of planner should I have? A big 8.5 by 11 one, little breast pocket, electronic palm pilot, iPack. I don't care. Get the one you're going to use. How many of you, if you lost your planner, would sit in the middle of the room, cry, freak out, and go on Prozac? Raise your hands. Those are the only people that are using theirs. So here, Natalie was my contact. I'm not sure she's going to be busy for a while, so I'm going to call her. Is Natalie in the room or she left? Natalie, when can I call you to suck up? No, what day next week? That's a good day for you. Following week? What'd you say? Wednesday. Okay, Wednesday. Written down. If I didn't do that, what's going to happen? I'm going to forget. See, for the people in the room that are a little bit younger, when you're in your 20s, here's what's going to happen to you. When you hit 30, you're going to be taking Tums and Rolaids like the rest of us, trust me. And when you hit 40, here's what's going to happen to you. You're going to be in the kitchen feeling pretty good. And you walk in the family room. You get in the family room, you're going, what the hell am I doing over here? Now you go retrace your steps. Now you're back in the kitchen. All pissed off. When you're 50, here's a real good one for you. Trust me. You take your car keys, put them in your left hand. With your right hand, you call one of your best friends up. You make some dinner plans. Hang up the phone. Go look for your car keys. And a half hour killed right there. And then my wife, she's got her glasses on her head. You know, she's got this. And she comes up to me and goes, honey, have you seen my glasses? And of course, my honest answer to her is, no. I think I saw him in the green, which is the farthest point of our house, one room. She comes back about 10 minutes later, I hate you. Oh, look in the mirror, didn't you, honey? Little vain. Write everything down. Because, see, everybody says they're going to call you, they're going to do stuff. Everybody says, you know, oh, I'll call you, I'll take care of this. Nobody does what they say anymore. If you just say, let's say somebody asks you a question, you don't have the answer, but I'll call you by 4 o'clock today to see if we have it in stock, or whatever it is. And you don't have the answer. You still call them at 4 o'clock. Now you're a step ahead of your competition. Just keep your word. Write it down. So number one is being organized. Trust me, you must have some sort of planner. If you said, well, I've been getting along really good without it, don't care. I'm cutting to the chase. I'm getting down to the bottom line, basic stuff. Number two, you must be assertive or aggressive. Now, what I mean by that is not beating people up. I'm talking about numbers and sales. I'll teach you a mathematical term. It's called exponential. Take any number and do the same number every day, and you will be incredibly, wildly profitable. See, here's the deal. After 90 days or 120 days, following this method, you can't have a bad month. You can just have better and best. And some of you go, well, I'm brand new. Okay, you make all new business calls. Someone's been in the business for 15 years, you just make customer client calls. My job, I just stay in touch with my existing client base. I've never made a proactive call in my entire life. As long as I've been a speaker, I mean, when I was a kid, I did. And I just stay in touch with my clients, out of sight, out of mind. Who ever saw the movie with Bill Murray called What About Bob? What's this called? Baby steps. Well, that's your typical salesperson. Around the 26th of the month, here's what they're saying. I'm screwed. I am nowhere near my quota. I can't go near the office. I can't even go near that zip code. Top salespeople, 19th in a month, 30 working on next month's stuff. It's strictly numbers. Now, I've never met a salesperson in my entire life that says this. Hey, you don't know what I want to do today? I want to go out and make some sales calls. Yeah, I want to be rejected, dejected, treated like dirt, talked down, and told no. That's what I'm looking forward to. If any of you look forward to making new business calls, you are sick people that should go to the vet, spend $35, and have yourself put to sleep. But guess what? You got to do it if you want to be successful. Well, you got to stay in touch with your clients. I'm sure when you talk to people all day, you're on the phone all day, the last thing you want to do is make more calls. It's part of the deal. It's called work. Number three, honesty. Hey, everybody says they're honest. Who's ever seen the TV show Cops? You ever seen anybody go, "You got me, I did it"? Anybody got kids? Did you ever tell your kids there's a Santa Claus? You lied. Ever tell your kids there's a tooth fairy? Well, there is, but Easter Bunny? Lied again. We lie to our kids, we lie to our family. I mean, of course, I lie to my kid too about the same thing. But where do you stop at work? Most salespeople are not known to be, they usually stretch the truth or embellish. I'll have a simple thing for you. I'm too stupid to lie. See, if you lie, you got to remember what you said. If you tell the truth, it's pretty easy. Learn the word no to someone, to a customer. It's okay. I can't do this. Or if they want a certain price, I can't do that. It's okay to walk away and say no to the price. See, because when you lower the price to a customer, here's what they're saying to the whole time beforehand. Why don't you give me that before? It's like walking a car dealership. How much is that car? $20,000. That's more than I want to spend. You take five steps. Okay, if you buy it now, it's $19,500. Well, that's $100 a step. If I walk around the building, how much is puppy going to cost me? I'll never forget, we had a chamber of commerce, and I'm not going to tell you who, it wouldn't be fair, but we have a special price for chambers, or repeat customers. And they call up, and they say, we'd like to book you. I said, well, okay, here's our fee. Oh, that's more than we want to spend. We'll give you this amount. I said, well, let me ask you a question. Do you belong to any associations with other chambers? Oh, yeah. I said, so if you go to associations, and you found out that every other chamber paid less than you paid, would that bother you? Well, of course it would. I said, so it would bother them. I can't lower my fee. And if you give an explanation behind it, then your client is one of two things, yes or no. It's okay to walk away from business. And it's also okay, how many of you have got some of your customers, usually about 2%, that drive you nuts? They talk down to you. They're abusive. They treat you like dirt. They're always yelling at you. They're unprofitable. I got to jump. They just waste all your time. Who's got customers like that? Here's what I want you to do Monday. Go up to them and go, remember the little rascals? Remember this? High sign? Fire them. Get rid of them. You will be so happy. Because now you can spend your time with the other 98% of the people that leave you alone and let you do your job. But let's go through the two most important lines on this card. Oh, by the way, the honesty, all you have is reputation. Now, the people in this room that are a little bit younger are not going to understand this yet. Because when you're younger, you're hungry, you want to make money. When you get older, money's not always the priority because you kind of got yourself established. But don't look at the sale like this. Look down the road. Because let me tell you something, and some of you just aren't going to understand this yet. All you have is your reputation. Your whole life's going to come down to two things. On this hand's going to be your friends and family, and over here is going to be your reputation. Nobody remembers the good stuff. I mean, you're never driving down a freeway, and if there's no accidents on the other side, hey, let's just slow down for the heck of it. We all look for the death and destruction. We remember the negatives. Never remember the positives. So don't compromise your reputation for a sale ever, ever, ever. And the two most important things on the bottom of this card is, number one, people buy from people. You can have any name on your company letterhead or your business card, whatever you want. If they don't like you, they don't trust you, they are not going to buy from you. And the key phrase, selling is asking, not telling, listening, not talking. I'm going to repeat that because it's everything. Selling is asking, not telling, listening, not talking. I'll prove it. Who's got a family doctor they really like? Who's got one? Let's see. How long have you been going to your doctor? 20 years? What's your doctor's first name? Francis. What?
Francis.
Francis. You trust Francis?
Yes.
You like Francis?
Yes.
If you came in today and he said your blood pressure is a little, you know, your heart's racing, you take your blood pressure and it's, whoa, you're freaking out. It's 210 over 190, which means you're dead. But and he goes, look, I'm going to give you some samples. You come back a week from today and we'll check it out. If it's leveled itself out, then we'll decide what kind of medication. What are you going to say to Francis?
Okay.
You trust him, right?
Yes.
Good. So she trusts Francis for 20 years. What school did Francis graduate from?
Sure.
What percent of the class did he graduate in?
I don't know.
A simple question. What is Francis's win-loss record? All right. How many people died in Francis's office in the last 2 years? Okay. What's his malpractice insurance? You have no idea. You go to him and go, fine, trust me. Go ahead. Guys, when we hit 50, scope. Okay, trust ya. It takes a second, but you'll get there. Anyway, she trusts her doctor, yet she knows nothing about your doctor. And let me see if your doctor does this. Your doctor, who's been for an annual physical recently? How long ago?
2 months ago.
2 months ago. Did your doctor pull out a sheet of paper and go, what's your first name?
Ronnie.
Ronnie? I see any mumps, any measles, any chicken pox since last time I saw you. Any cancer, any heart? You're still on this medication. And they had a list of questions in front of them, right? They didn't just look at you and go, well, how do you feel? They ask you all these questions. They didn't just look at you and you walk in the office and they go, spleen. And they don't see them walking out going, oh man, I forgot the heart thing. Shoot. I always forget the darn heart. Anybody here have a law degree? Anybody know a lawyer? Anybody ever see TV? When a lawyer walks in, when there's a case, when there's a courtroom, when there's a trial, what do they have in front of them? Notes, right? Well, you don't just, they don't just put a witness on the jury, I mean a witness on the stand and go, I got nothing, Scooter, how about you? They have all these questions in front of them, don't they? And their job is to sell 6 to 12 judges. And Frances, the doctor there, his job is to sell her, to list, to find out what's wrong. If she's healthy, if her blood pressure is 120 over 80, her pulse is 72, her cholesterol is 135, and she's eating 63 Twinkies a day, but her weight is good and her sugar is good, what's the physician going to say? Don't change. But he's got this cheat sheet in front of him. The attorneys have this cheat sheet in front of them. Anybody here an ex-teacher? Anybody teach? How long do you teach for?
12 years.
Just primary or secondary?
Primary.
Did you ever walk into a classroom without a lesson plan?
No.
No. Right away, no. If she did, you know what they'd call her? Substitute. Anybody here a pilot? What do you, how many hours you got? Okay. Did you ever take off without going through a pre-flight?
Never.
I don't care if you're a commercial pilot. I'm a pilot. I'll never sit there and go, hey, I'm ready to go. Every single time we got our cheat sheet. I got notes in front of me. Is anybody bothered by these notes? Some focus I'm going to cover today in a short period of time? None of you seem bothered. Then let me ask you the question. How come many of you sit in front of a customer and start talking? Francis never told you, said, okay, let me tell you about my practice. I've been doing this long, boom, boom, boom. You know nothing about your doctor because their job is to ask you questions. And your doctor's never done this to you. What's your first name? Judy or Trudy?
Trudy.
She never said, hey, Trudy, look, business was a little off that last year, so I'm always thinking. So I decided to start doing specials, okay? So here's the deal. Next month, appendectomies, 2 for 1. You bring one of your buddies in, one of you guys getting a good deal. You know what I'm talking about? And I got another thing called the referral program. You get me 5 sick patients, your next physical, it's on me. I need the sick ones, not the healthy ones, because we can't make money on the healthy. You know, got to pad the test. You know what I'm talking about. Anyway, your doctor never says that to you. You trust your doctor. We trust our lawyer. We trust our dentist. You know why? They're professionals. We trust our pilot. Starting today, I want you to think about questions. On my website, halbecker.com, just go to Power Tools. There's a questionnaire there. Download it. It's free. Just play around with it. It doesn't. And people say, what kind of question should I ask? I don't care. When you walk out of their office, if you know why you didn't get the business, well, I'm getting, they're buying from XYZ company, they're doing this, they bought this, 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 and this. They bought this before, they bought this 3 years ago, this worked, this didn't work. You know everything, and yet you didn't get the business, and I'm your boss. Nice job. Doctors are incredible salespeople, but the best of the best of the best, the best salespeople I've ever seen in my life, take a guess who? Take a guess. They're about this big. Go to a supermarket with a 7-year-old. You want to see sales? Here it is in action. Mom! Dad, I want those ding-dongs. Next word out of your mouth.
No.
No. Next word out of the kid's mouth. But I want to. How come? Why not? And they won't quit until one of two things happens. You break down and buy the damn ding-dongs, or the kids grounded till they're 40. And right now, we're in the best season of all. We got 5 seasons in our country. Well, you know the 4. 5th one, Girl Scout cookie season. How many of you are Girl Scout moms? How many in the last couple weeks been at Kmart or Walmart hanging out with your daughter? Now here's the thing. I can't get a 40-year-old to make a sales call, but I can get any 7-year-old to go up to anybody and go, ha, will you buy my cookies? They have no fear. They'll approach anyone. They don't look at them and go, hey, what do you think? Think Atkins? Maybe the South Beach diet. I don't know. Oh, maybe they're lactose intolerant. Nah, they're diabetic. Hey, think they'll get through credit? They don't care. Will you buy my cookies? I'm pulling in my neighborhood about 2 years ago, and my daughter is with my neighbor's kid, and she's pushing a wheelbarrow through the development. So I go up to my wife, I go, honey, what's Nicole doing? Well, I don't know. So later she comes in, I go, honey, what are you doing? I'm selling stuff. Well, what kind of stuff? You know, stuff. Well, what kind of stuff? You know, be more specific. You know, food. Well, what kind of food? You know, food, the kind of food you eat. Honey, can I take a look at the wheelbarrow? And there's a little blue towel. I pick up the towel, and there's an American single slice. A stick of celery. A banana, an orange, and an Oreo cookie. A single Oreo cookie. She's going door to door, selling my neighbors our food out of her refrigerator. Oh, now I gotta email everybody, and I'm thinking, oh, I can't believe she's doing it. Hey, honey, yeah. Did you sell anything? Because, yeah, I made $3. Well, get back out. You still got inventory. Swear to God. And then this past year, she said, Dad, will you go with me to sell Girl Scout cookies? Oh, what does Daddy do? Daddy's a sales trainer. You got it, honey. Now, I can stand next to you and shadow you and observe you, or I can go over to the side and give you feedback. What? Okay, I can stand next to you, or I can go off to the side and just kind of watch you a little bit. Which do you prefer? And, of course, her answer was just brilliant. Whatever. Okay, so I go off to the side. She goes two doors down. She knocks on the door. Hi, my name's Nicole. You'd like to buy some Girl Scout cookies? And right away the neighbor said, no, thank you. So she looks at me and goes, what do I do? I go, I don't know. Ask her the question. What question? Any question. Well, what do you think it should be? Just ask it. Now, understand something. My neighbor does not know that I'm inside of the house. I think my daughter's psychotic. Finally, I said, well, just ask why not. What? Why not? Guess what happened? Take a guess. Two boxes, just like that. See, let me show you something. Hope I can do this. We're in Vegas. Okay, dollar bill, nothing fancy. Some of you in the back might not be able to see this, but you got the cheap seats, so that's the way it goes. Ooh. You know what this is called? It's called a trick. It's a $35 trick. Yes. First time I saw this trick, I'm trying it, and I got a big audience, like 1,000 people or something like that, and they got the big screens, the whole shot. And I try this trick, and I get it all set up, and I prepare it, and I practice like 5 minutes. Shoot. Try it again. Okay. Darn. So now I'm flying home from the West Coast back to Cleveland. I got, 4 hours. Dollar bills are flying around the cabin because I'm practicing. This guy next to me is freaking out. Flight attendants, what are you doing? Pilot comes out, hopefully right seats, And I have 4 hours to practice this. And after a while, I just got it. It's all it is, a trick. Well, selling is a trick too. You got to practice asking questions. When are you going to do it? Here. When you leave today? Where are you going to go right from here? Anybody, is there any more education this afternoon? Yeah. Okay. Go up to anybody at the table before you leave. Just go up to anybody and go, hi, where are you from? Ask anybody a question. Just ask anybody a question. They'll start talking to you. It's that easy. But we got to practice learning how to listen and ask rather than talk. See, kids, they're such natural salespeople. You know why? It's from within. But the kids today, when I was growing up, it's totally changed. Everything has totally changed. I'll give you an example. Remember the playgrounds when we were kids? Look at the playgrounds today. Little molded, little wood chips on the ground so the kids don't hurt themselves. Whoops. Well, that's going to sound good on the tape. They've got little like foam rubber. They've got molded plastic, little helmets. When I was a kid, what did you have? You took four poles, you stuck them in cement. You went really high in the swing, and the first two poles are popping out of the ground. And your friends are in the back going, go higher. Higher. Jump. You suck. Remember the monkey bars over asphalt? And then the slide, the steel slide that baked in the hot August sun. We had shorts that were about this big. And here's what you heard going down the slide. Eee-oh! Eee-oh! And then our rocket scientist parents, the way they were, they don't run around the house with a stick or a pencil. You'll poke your eye out. Remember that? But in the meantime, they went and bought us this whammo game. The big circle over there. Big circle over here. You put your best friend behind the circle. You got behind this circle. In your right hand, you took a mini steel-tipped javelin. And you threw it at your best friend, hoping not to impale them. Jarts. Yeah, this is great. Well, I tell you about the kids. See, the kids today have no attention span. None. Look at the sitcoms on TV. Look, in 1950s, one theme running through it. Now there's seven or eight themes. You know, my daughter, I go up to my, she goes, I said, when I was your age, we only had three stations. No! Yeah, only three. But we didn't have a remote control. You didn't have a clicker? No, I was the clicker. My dad used to say, stand there. Well, what'd you do? We went outside and played. Did you have Nintendo? No. Game Boy? No. What'd you do? We went out and played in dirt. Now go play in dirt. Do something. But see what happened? The reason I'm telling you this, because when we were younger, we had mail. We got the mail. Now we got, then we got phones. We had phones too. But then we got faxes. Now think about it. We got voicemail. At home, at work, on our cell phones. We have faxes. At home, sometimes at work. We have email. At home, we at work. We're nonstop. Everything's immediate. Now, now, now. Even Southerners are becoming type A. I go into Southern companies and I see people emailing the person in the booth next to them. In the cubicle. Hi, how you doing? Send. Just stand up. Hey, how you doing? It's getting crazy. We've got to slow down a little bit. See, if all of you only had one customer, how would you treat them? One customer. Like a royalty, like a Greek god? Why don't we do that all the time? Let me give you my background so you can see that I'm not making this stuff up. Maybe I am. I was a total screw-up. Who's a screw-up like me? But I was a pretty good student, and I graduated at the top of the bottom of my class. I had a 1-8 acume. That's out of 4 points. My wife keeps saying, do not tell our daughter that. Okay, you know. I don't know if you call it crappy teachers or a lousy student. I'm just going to, I'll say crappy teachers. I just didn't care. And I got out of school and thinking, okay, what am I going to do with my life? I got to go to college. Got to go to college. Why? Two reasons. One, Vietnam. Number two is next step in your glorified high school diploma. But here's the deal. Being 5'7", 145 pounds, I don't think I was going on too many athletic scholarships. I wasn't playing too much ball, if you know what I mean. And then having a 1-8 acume, I didn't see too many schools like Harvard going, yeah, we need an experiment. So I don't think academic scholarships were in my picture either. So my father, who was my wind beneath my wings, my mentor, my guide, he goes, Hal, you got to go with life with a business plan. You got to have a plan. I said, okay, Papa, I love you more than anything in the world, but before I put this plan together, let me ask you a question. He goes, what's that, son? I go, we're poor. We're dirt poor. I mean, we really did grow up poor. We never owned a home, lived in apartments. And I go, where's your plan? Of course, his response is, don't do what I do, do what I say. So I put this plan together. I really buckled down. I got serious about this plan. And my freshman year of college, I picked the University of Cincinnati. And I picked it for two major reasons. Number one, I thought they were brilliant reasons. Number one, three of my best friends are going there. Number two is the only school by state law that would accept me. So I'm in. Now, unlike President Clinton, my freshman year, just once. Yeah, right. You know, I like when Matt Lauer is interviewing Vice President Gore. He said, Matt Lauer says, Vice President Gore, we have to ask you this question. Did you smoke marijuana? Right away, his answer was, yes, I did. The next question is the dumbest question I think it's ever been asked in the history of the universe. There's never been a dumber question before Clinton. It was never asked. It's too stupid of a question. It's like saying, do you own a car? Do you ever put gas in it? So Matt Lauer says, Vice President Gore, you have to ask this question. Did you inhale? And without even batting an eyelash, Vice President Gore says, as deeply as I could. And then Rosie O'Donnell's interviewing this Cheech from Cheech and Chong. She goes, at least Cheech in the 70s, you admitted you inhaled. He goes, amen, I never exhaled. So My freshman year was a little bit of a blur, if you know what I mean. Three of my best friends are moving back to Cleveland. Well, I hate peer pressure, so I joined them. And I finished up at a small Jesuit college called John Carroll. Now, this is a very confusing time for me in my life. See, I'm Jewish-Italian, which means I don't want to buy it wholesale or steal it. And now I'm having Catholic guilty thoughts. Put this package together. I am screwed up. So I'm a senior. I'm told I must declare a major. Sociology. Why? No math. Skate my way through school. Got a degree in nothingness. And the best part is, as an adult, I did go back to get my master's and PhD and end up with a 4.0, but I got into it. But so I get out of college and think, okay, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I want to sell medical supplies. Why? That's what I wanted to do. Why? Because I put myself through school working for a laboratory detailing the services. Trust me, when all of you were 18 or 21 years old, here's what you weren't saying. Yeah, advertising specialties. That's the ticket. You got into this job for one of two reasons. Because your family did it, or the job you wanted you couldn't get. Most of us, almost all of us, get the job we didn't want. Because we want something else we didn't go after. You know, I mean, how many people are going to be professional athletes or actors or musicians, whatever it might be? So they don't sell medical supplies. So I started going on all these interviews and rejected. And I'll never forget what it was like being 21 years old, having a drain on your back. Just being, like, draining out your confidence, just telling you no. When they tell you no, they're saying, you're not good enough to work for us. So I go to my guidance counselor, he goes, Hal, you need markability. I go, markability. He goes, no, you don't. You think you do. You need markability. You need to go to a big company. You need great training. I'll get you interviews at IBM, Procter & Gamble, and AT&T. And he did. And they all rejected me, too. Right across the hall from where I live, this guy said, Hal, why don't you come work for Xerox? Xerox? You mean, like, sell copiers? I don't think so. I ran out of money. Interviewed at Xerox. After 7 interviews, I got hired. 7. Let me tell you about our training. 5 weeks in the branch of reading books on Xerox and xerography and the history of Xerox and toner and developer, all this junk. And then you had to take a test in our training center, take a test to get out. If you didn't pass either test, you were sent home at branch expense. And then our training center was 3 weeks, 21 days, 6 days a week, 12 to 14 hours a day of role playing. You know what that's called in the scientific community? Brainwashing. I grew up so poor, I'm not saying this is right or wrong, at 21 I said, show me the money. Show me what I have to do to make money because my goal is to retire by the time I'm 40 years old. And I call it retire, I call it, you know, not give a crap, you know, you just deal with who you want, when you want, on your own terms. But I will do whatever it takes to make money, of course, legitimately and honestly. 70s was party time, was college, now it's time to buckle down. Show me what I got to do. So I bought my first calendar. And I put in that date, from this date to this date, for 1 year, I'm going to do everything Xerox says. Whatever they say to do, I'm going to do it. Because if they're spending $137 million on a training center, maybe they know something this 21-year-old omnipotent kid doesn't know. I'm going to do exactly what they say. And my first year, I was number one salesman at Xerox. We had 11,000 people, and I was number one. I made $82,300 my first year. That was 1976-77. It's a lot of money for a 21-year-old kid. That was 5 times what my dad ever made. Immediately, I went and bought a house, a dog, a car. I got change back from the dog. You know, it was just an amazing, and I'll never forget going to our President's Club trip. There's 1,200 people in the audience. You can hear everybody going, that's Al Becker. He's number one. And I'm like 21. These guys are 28, 29, 30. It was like the Nobel Prize for sales. I never, ever would feel that incredible, I don't know, from your peers. That feeling, and it would never come again. It was the highlight. But I learned 3 things at Xerox that changed my life, and I want you to write these 3 words down if you can. These 3 words enabled me to retire by the time I was 36. And I will tell you, anybody in this room, there is no difference between anybody in this room and me or anybody sitting next to you. We're all the same. We're all the same. You just got to decide what you want to do with your life. But these 3 words changed my life. Number one, learn your product. Now, when you're at this show, that means you have to wander around and learn everything, see new stuff. Don't gravitate to what you've been doing. Imagine if somebody has an appendicitis and you go to the doctor and the doctor goes, well, we got this new thing called laparoscopic, but I like the old-fashioned way. You know, we're just going to cut you. You'll be in the hospital for a week. Oh, the new one, you might be out the next day, but I don't want to learn all that newfangled stuff. Learn your product. Learn it better than anybody else. You don't go to your doctor and go, Doc, I got chest pains. The doctor goes, hold on a second. C. That's some serious crap there. Wow. Learn your stuff. Number two, get to know your competition. Your competition is not your enemy. Your competition is your best friend. Competition makes you better. Competition raises the bar. If you are the only one around, you can be lazy and lousy. And never, ever, ever knock the competition. Who's got life insurance? What kind do you have? Whole term?
I don't know.
Who knows what they have? What do you have?
Term.
Right away, see, he's getting defensive. I'm just kidding around. I'm just making this up. But right away, I told him he's stupid. You never tell someone they're stupid. I might have said, hey, you know something about 12 years ago? What a great decision. But the industry changed. So we talked about universal. Never knock the competitor. They've got some strengths over you and some weaknesses. You've got some strengths and weaknesses over them. Your job is just to know them. They can be your friend, too. Two of my closest friends are speakers, sales trainers. We're direct competition. Who cares? We raise the bar for each other. Learn your product, learn your competition. Put a little squiggly line next to that. That's called working smarter. Number three, work harder. Yeah, I said it. Work harder. And all I did to become number one, I learned my product, I learned my competition. And when I got out of school at Xerox, they gave me a quota of 10 new business calls a day. I said, okay, what's not going to make me money? Getting up late, going home early, swimming, golfing, shopping, flying. All this stuff's not going to make me money. What's going to make me money? More rejection. I'll set a goal of 20 calls a day. People, but hell, in our business, we have emergencies and we have problems and things come up. Yeah, I'm from the planet Earth also, Sparky, okay? If I can only do 10 calls today, tomorrow I'll do 15. But at the end of the week, when everybody else did their 50 calls, I did 100. End of the month, when they did 200, I did 400. At the end of the year, when they did 2,400 calls, I just did 4,800 calls. It's called consistency. It's just like working out. I know anybody that says, you know what I want to do today? I'm going to make more calls. I'm going to start that diet. I'm going to work out. I love going to health clubs around January 2nd. Here come the resolutionists. You can't get a parking space. You want to go today, you can park right next to the handicap spot if you want. And I love what Zig Ziglar says. Isn't it amazing how much stuff we get done the day before vacation? We all put off doing the things we don't want to do. So I just worked harder. Stayed there 5 years, worked my way up, started my own company, Direct Opinions. We're the ones that if you took your car into a dealership and they called to see if you were satisfied, let's say you had service on your car, whatever it might be, we were the ones that called you and just said, hey, how you doing? It's 3-4 questions, not a sales call, just customer follow-up. Started on the second floor of my house, took $15,000 out of my savings account, and my goal was to open up 92 offices, 92 major cities, build up to about a $50 or $60 million business, and we're moving. First month, lost $8,000. Supposed to lose 12, so I'm ahead of schedule. But I didn't feel so good. I felt like a kick in the stomach. And being the brave guy that I am, that was Christmas Eve of 82, I just felt some pain. February 18th of 83, I finally went to the doctor. Said, I'd like to do some tests, ultrasound. We can run another test. What's that? It goes, CAT scan. Well, I make a long story short, came back, said, Hal, you've got terminal cancer. All the lymph nodes throughout your abdomen, through your chest, you got some hot spots in your brain. You're stage 3. And I got to tell you straight up, I don't think you're going to make it. 2, 3 months, 4 months, can't give you an exact time. But the only thing we have is an experimental program. You'll be in the hospital for 8.5 months. That's all we have. And you're probably not going to make it. And if you do get through the chemo, you'll probably die of infection because your white count will be flat, your red count. You won't have enough energy to even pick up a spoon. You won't even be able to crawl out of here. You're going to lose a third of your body weight, probably close to half, every stitch of hair. And I got to tell you, everything they said came true. Stayed almost 9 months in the hospital. I was lucky, though. I beat cancer. And why I'm telling you this, and I'm shortening the story up because of time, but the reason I'm telling you is real simple. See, our business in sales is negatives. You don't walk in places and they go, hey, whatever you're selling, I'm buying. Here's a check. Just fill it out. We're always going to get no's before we hear yes. So I decided when I was sick, I'm going to change my attitude. Now, what saved my life? Simple. Conventional medical practice. The chemo saved my life. I got lucky. But I decided to make a game out of it. I remember a couple days during the year, I had enough energy. I got blood transfusions from some drug addicts that had good blood. I don't know. But I was like, wow, I got some energy today. Some speed freaks probably gave me their blood. But I remember wrapping myself in a sheet one day. I'm 83 pounds, and I used to do the greatest Gandhi imitation you ever saw. I grab my IV pole, I'm going, oh my goodness, please follow me. And I'm doing line, I'm walking around the hospital, people are following me around, doing little line dances, And then post-it notes, your industry, post-it notes just came out in 83. I haven't been home in 4.5 months. I go to my house, I couldn't wait to just go home, just to see my house. And I walk in, there's post-it notes everywhere. I've never seen these things before. I'm thinking, how do they glue these? What are they, things all over my walls? And I'm looking at them, and my friend said, Hal, when you die, get dibs on the refrigerator, Nancy. I got the TV and VCR, Don. Billy got my car. They all got dibs on all my stuff in case I died. We made it a game. And it made it fun. Because now what happened? They weren't afraid to talk to me. How am I doing? How are you feeling? Because nobody wants to be around a sick person. You know someone at work, you ask them how their weekend was. And there's 20 minutes about how miserable their life is. And you got that fake Woody Allen grin on your face. Like shut up. I'm not listening to a word you said. If there's a bubble over your head, you're a cartoon character. And then you got the opposite, where you ask me how their weekend was. And like Donnie Marie, where they just like so perfect, you want to puke. You know, because by comparison, yours looks so lousy. Attitude is everything when it comes down to business. So I got lucky. I beat cancer. I decided to sell the company, and I've always wanted to be a speaker and author. And you know, so I wrote a book, got rejected by God knows how many publishers, 30, 40 publishers. Finally got a deal, and like anything, work hard. Came out with a second book, and the second book is my baby. It's on customer service. It's 50 stories, the worst service in America. You know, every time you go places, they talk about how good they are, like Nordstrom's and L.L. Bean and Ritz-Carlton and Southwest Airlines. No one ever took... I took my pocket dictator for 3.5 years. Every time I had a lousy service, I dictated it. I had hundreds of stories. I give it to the publisher, I got the top 50. He goes, "Hell, you can't keep the names in there." "Yeah, I can. They're all going to sue you." "Oh, yeah, you're right." So I changed the name. Some of you can figure some of these out. Printos. Office stuff. Imbecile Suites Hotels. Hal Tun. Oh, here's one. Veronica's Drawers. I think you're getting the idea. And then we said, who are the 10 best companies in the world and what they do different? And we asked the CEOs, the 10 best companies. I said, because once you sell the customer, you got to keep them. I said, just tell me. I got 6 questions. And we asked the CEOs of Disney and L.L. Bean and Ritz-Carlton, Southwest Airlines and Nordstrom, and Ritz-Carlton and a few others. And I said, okay, I have 6 questions. And but blew me away, all 10 CEOs answered 2 questions identically. I said, what is the most important element you look for when you hire people? All 10 said the same thing, attitude. Number 2, what are your policies and procedures regarding customer service? All 10 said the same thing. I'll give you a hint. Variations on a theme, but the same idea. It's the old Nike slogan. Just do it. So I'm going to give you 2 lines on customer service to end today. If you can do these 2 lines with your clients, they will never leave you. And then you will just continue to get more business from your existing base. Number 1, customer service isn't what you think it is. It's what the customer thinks. See, whatever you think is not important. Battery. Want to give me the handheld real quick? No? Okay. What, did they tell me to get off? I got 4 more minutes. I'm 4 more minutes still. Okay, I saw the watch. Oh, it's right here. I'm at 54 minutes. Anyway, 1, customer service is doing more. It's not what you think, it's what the customer thinks. Imagine going to a restaurant and you get bad food or bad service. What do you tell people? Don't go there. You don't say, don't see Bob the waiter or Kathy the cook. You blame the whole place. You might blame the whole chain. Then the server comes by and goes, how's everything? And you go, not so good. How about a free dessert? Well, maybe you're a diabetic. Now you go into a coma and die. Why don't you ask them, what do you want? What can I do for you? 2, customer service is doing more for the customer than the customer expects. Imagine going to your car dealership, you bought the car and all that, and then the warranty runs out and your brakes start squealing. You call the dealership up and you go, oh, my brakes are squealing. And they go, well, how much are brakes? They go, $250. Can you bring it in now? Yeah, sure. So you drop the car off. They actually drop you off at work. They'll say they'll be ready by 4 o'clock. They call you at 1 o'clock, 3 hours on a schedule, said your car is ready. Like it's to drop it off for you. Yeah, you bet. They drop the car off. Now, they come into your office and give you the keys and the invoice, but the invoice isn't $250 like they quoted you. It's $195. Wow. And then you go out to your car at 5 o'clock. It's washed inside and out. The outside's been cleaned. The inside's been vacuumed, a little armor all on the dashboard to shine it up a little bit. You going back to that dealership forever? Yeah. You bet you are. Why? They did more for you than you expect. So let me end today by just reading a poem. I didn't bring many. I just brought some books. If anybody's interested, we'd both go for 20. The total is 25. We donate all the proceeds to cancer. So it's a good cause. And let me just read a poem to end today. It's by Charles Swindoll. It's called Attitude. And I'm not a religious guy, but this just kind of puts it together for me, especially in the business that you guys are in. That's Northern for y'all. The longer I live, the more I realize the impact of attitude on life. Attitude is more important than facts. It is more important than past, than circumstances, than money, than education, than failures or successes, whether people think or say or do. It is more important than appearance, giftedness, or skill. We cannot change our past. We cannot change the fact that people act in a certain way. We have no control over the inevitable. The only thing we can do is pull the one string we have, and that is our attitude. The remarkable thing is we have choice every day regarding the attitude we'll embrace for that day. I am convinced that life is 10% what actually happens to me and 90% how you react to it. And so it is with you. We're all in charge of our own attitudes. And my mentor always said this to me. She goes, Hal, the idea is 10%. The implementation is 90%. And then she follows up and says, and you can't teach pigs to fly no matter how long the runway is. Thanks for your time.